Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we get to hear a very informative interview between Dr. Meg Meeker and our friend Dr. Walt Larimore. Dr. Larimore has worked with my dad for years and has been a guest on our radio program many times. And as a practicing family physician for over 30 years, he is an expert on the human body. And on today's program, Dr. Larimore will be discussing how we as parents can help our daughters understand the changes in their bodies as they grow into womanhood. So here now is Dr. Meg Meeker as she begins the first part of our interview with Dr. Walt Larimore on today's edition of Family Talk.
Well, I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and we're here with a very special guest, Dr. Walt Larimore, who is a friend, a colleague, a man after God's own heart. And we are going to be talking about a wonderful new book, actually book number 30 that he has written, and it's called The Ultimate Girl's Body Book. And is this a companion that you've written to the Ultimate Boy's Body Book, or did this come first?
It is. No, the boy's book came first. And Meg, both of the books came from, you know, I'm just kind of like you. I just practice medicine, see patients and families and parents. But early on in my practice, the local schools wanted somebody to come in to speak to fifth graders about their changing bodies. And I've done that every year through my whole practice career. And these books are just compilations of the questions that kids ask every year when they're in the fifth grade. And I just thought, well, it'd be nice to have the questions and the answers for every parent who wonders what are the answers to some of these hard questions.
Exactly. You know, fifth grade is a wonderful, wonderful time for kids, but I think it's a hard time as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that you've written these books, because in my practice, this topic is one of the most commonly asked for resources. You know, parents will say, what can I give my kids to read that will help explain to them the changes in their body? And I find that usually parents start asking right around the fifth and the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. But there are many other questions that kids need answered long before that. So, but fifth grade is a great place for parents to start. What I'd like to know, Walt, is were you prompted to write this book because you were asked to come in and speak to fifth graders, or is this something that parents had asked for in your own practice as well?
Well, both. I mean, just like you, parents ask these questions because their kids ask them questions and they don't necessarily know the answers, and sometimes they're embarrassed by the questions. And the information, especially on the internet, is so wide-ranging in how trustworthy it is. And so my goal with these two books was to generate resources that were both biblically sound and medically reliable. And so to do that, what I gathered for each book were advisory panels of about 60 professionals for each book, everything from Christian psychologists and psychiatrists to pediatricians and family physicians to nutritionists and dietitians to theologians and pastors, as well as teams of, in the case of the girls' books, moms and daughters who read it.
Right.
And that allowed the Christian Medical and Dental Associations to endorse the book because they're medically reliable and biblically sound. And Meg, don't you find that parents want information they can depend upon and that they know is trustworthy?
Absolutely. And I know, you know, we've talked about this before with our colleagues, and that is there's so much information out there for parents. And a lot of it is not medically sound, particularly now with the internet. Unfortunately, parents will read so much, and so much of the information they get is anecdotal. It's not scientifically sound. And they take it and run with it. And they believe things about their children, about parenting, about, you know, what's wrong with their children that are really untrue. And as a physician, it's hard, and it takes a lot of time in my practice to try to undo a lot of the myths that they, you know, have latched onto, and to assuage some of their fears, because parents are very, very frightened. So I'm really grateful that not only have you written The Ultimate Girl's Body Book and The Ultimate Boy's Body Book, that it's medically sound, but you put a Christian bent to it so that everything is biblically based. And what I love about this, too, is that you write really for parents and for kids. So was that tricky when you were writing the book, that you knew parents were going to read and then give to their children to read, so that the two of them could come together and discuss the book. I imagine it would have been tricky to write a book for parents and kids at the same time.
You know, just like you do in your practice, when we are advising a family that comes in and there's a mom and a child, or a dad and a child, or mom and dad and a child, we need to learn over time to give our advice so that the entire family can hear it. And so I think that the writing in the book is just a reflection of how pediatricians and family physicians advise families all over the world every day. But it was nice to test it against actual real focus groups who sometimes revised the language a little bit and made suggestions on how it could be even communicated better. And there's a chapter at the beginning of each book, Meg, one written for the child, one written for the parent, about how to get the best out of it. In some cases, it'll be families reading chapter by chapter together. In others, they may want the child to read a chapter and then talk about it. And yet others have written back and said they've used the book for a weekend getaway. But anyway, a variety of ways to use it. Some of the questions are very appropriate for very young children. And then there's other questions that you may want to wait until a child's a little bit older. And Meg, as we see in our practices, there are some kids at age 9 or 10 are very mature and can handle information very early. And then there's others you may want to wait till they're 12, 13.
Exactly. You know, many times parents come to me and ask, when is the best age to start talking to their kids about sexual activity? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, for many kids, the basics have to start fairly early, because even in the second grade, you've always got kids who have older siblings mm-hmm. who come into class and love to show off the information that they think they know. And mm-hmm. so they talk to our kids about it. But I think that it's important for parents to feel comfortable talking with their kids about body changes, sex and sexuality. Why do you feel that so many of us parents are squeamish when it comes to talking to our kids about their bodies and changes?
I actually have written a chapter about that. And my belief is that it's because so many parents, this was not modeled for them by
right.
their parents. And they've never seen it and they've never heard it. They don't know how to do it. And one of the great things about Family Talk is the resources that you guys have to help us as parents to do exactly these sorts of things. But the chapter in the girls' book is this. It's Talk to My Parents About Sex. Are you crazy?
Yeah. That's
and
right.
We actually encourage the little girls to use the book to engage their parents in discussions. Because what the studies show, Meg, you've seen this in the literature, the pediatric literature, what the studies show is that our kids want us as parents to be their guides, to be their coaches. They may roll their eyes when we give them advice, but they seek it, and we are the most important determinants of decisions that they will make.
Yeah.
And so my prayer is that this book will help parents take initially what I think is an uncomfortable role of answering these questions and talking about these questions. You don't have to be the expert. You don't have
exactly.
to know every answer. It's fine to say, I don't know, but we'll find someone who knows.
Yes.
But our hope is that this will be a foundation for discussions that will allow that child to approach those parents throughout his or her adolescence and young adulthood, that there'll be a freedom within families to talk about anything.
Exactly. You know, and I encourage parents that early on in their child's life, second and third grade, I think it's important for parents to establish themselves as the go-to person mm-hmm. when they have questions about anything. And I think it's important that parents communicate to their kids. And I know that this is hard because a lot of parents are squeamish and frightened and feel that they're not the expert. But to communicate to their kids, whenever you have a question about your body or sexual activity, romance, whatever, come to me, because I'm the one who knows the answers. Kids in your class don't always have the right answers. And so come to me. So it really needs to be initiated by the parents. But I just want to encourage our listeners out there who are feeling, oh, that's really not something that I wanted to approach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a book. The Ultimate Girls Body Book is a wonderful place to start, because these are conversations that your kids are going to have. So it's not a matter of, you know, whether they're going to have them or not. They will. But it's very important that you, as a mom or dad, have the conversations with your kids. Let's dive into the book. You talk about health and why it's important to be holistically healthy and that our approach to our health should always be not just from a physical standpoint, from an emotional relationship standpoint. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's actually one of the earlier chapters in the book because the Bible doesn't talk about just physical health. It also talks about our emotional and mental health. It talks about our intellectual health. It talks about our, obviously, about our spiritual health. I think probably the one of the best examples of that is when the physician Luke is writing about the preteen Jesus. This is in Luke 2:52. Dr. Luke says that Jesus grew in wisdom and stature in relationship with men and in relationship with God. So he grew in wisdom. He grew intellectually.
Yeah.
He grew in stature. So he grew physically. He grew in relationship with men. So the relationships, the social health. And he grew in relationship with God, spiritual health. And so what I see in the Bible is I kind of think of it, Meg, as a health vehicle with four wheels, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, and relational or social health. Now, the power steering is that spiritual health wheel. But if those four wheels are equally inflated and if they're equally healthy, the ride can be pretty smooth. But if one of them gets flattened or is low in air, boy, the road can be bumpy.
That's a great analogy. I mean, you know, I don't like to think of myself as a car, but I mean, hey, it works. I think, but it's great. You know, if you've got a great balance, you're physically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually strong, you're absolutely right. Life is smoother and life is so much better. So I think that's a wonderful, wonderful analogy. Do you find in your practice, well, I assume in your practice that you can speak openly about your faith to your patients, or do you feel intimidated ever? Or do you, or do all your patients just know you're Christian because they've read your books?
Yeah, most of my patients aren't Christian. And for early years of my practice, I actually didn't bring my faith to work. I had been taught in medical school and residency that to bring your faith into the exam room was unethical and it was maybe even illegal. We now know that neither is the case, that most patients want their physicians to ask about their spiritual beliefs and to ask about their spiritual history. Most patients want to know that their physicians have an ethical and moral center to them. And most patients want, in particular instances, for their doctors to pray with them. And so in my practice, it was a learning to learn how to begin to inquire of patients what their spiritual beliefs were so I could meet them where they were at, to learn which ones wanted me to pray with them and when. And now it's just become part of practice. I can't separate the two because they go together. What the medical research now shows is that physicians of faith who do this actually engender more trust from their patients and higher patient satisfaction. That doesn't mean we push our faith on people, but that we understand that when people encounter illness, they begin to think about God. In fact, I teach residents, and I was rounding with the residents in the hospital recently, and there was a young man in the intensive care unit who had a terrible infection that he was recovering from. And the resident said, "Dr. Larimore, we don't need to go in there because he's doing well. We hope he's out of the ICU in a day or two and out of the hospital this week." But we always teach the residents to ask about spiritual histories. And so he said, "And this young man is an atheist." And I said, "Oh, I would like to see him because I like to publish papers." And I said, "I think there's a case report here." And the resident looked at me and said, "This type of infection is not rare. It's very, very common. You'll never get a case report." And I said, no. An atheist in the ICU. I've never seen one. And so we walked
there in. There you go.
And we met this young man. I said, I've been told that you're an atheist. I have a quick question. During your stay here, have you thought about God?" And this guy looked at me, he smiled, and he said, "I've talked to him every day." And I said,
"Drats, wow.
I don't get a paper."
But
illness brings us a new way of thinking about spirituality. And for Christian doctors, as you know, Meg, it's a wonderful opportunity to meet people where they're at.
Exactly. And I find that very often, you know, those conversations come up very naturally. But if I'm talking, not even with a critically ill patient, but with a patient in my office who's got depression or anxiety or is sort of feels that emotionally their back is against the wall, they're really broken to the point where they know they need help. Mm-hmm. And those conversations, and there have been many times where if I can't ask them about their faith or if they believe in God, to whom they can turn and cling to, sometimes I just don't know where to take them,
yeah.
You know, particularly with the emotional and the psychological issues. You cover a lot of ground in this book, and you talk about the changes in the body, and you talk about, you know, the body changes that girls are going through. You and I both know that the age of menarche has dropped in young girls, mm-hmm. and this makes it challenging for them, and it makes it challenging for their parents. Do you recommend that, well, we kind of covered this a little bit earlier, but I just want to hear you say it. Do you recommend that when you're talking to young girls about menstruation and body changes, should mom do it or should dad initiate the conversation? Or does it matter?
Yeah, I think it depends on each family. Most of the time, we recommend mom with the little girls, dad with the little boys, because just experience, I don't know, studies that show one way or the other, but just my experience is that seems to work best. But I'm beginning mm-hmm. to get anecdotal evidence from, like I mentioned earlier in the program, that families can do this very, very effectively. But you also have to address the fact, what about the single dad or the single mom
yeah.
who has the opposite sex child? And Meg, as you guys talk about all the time here on the program, there's not a harder job in the world than being a single parent.
You bet.
And my recommendation, in the case of a single dad who has little girls, and I put this in the chapter for parents, that he find a mature Christian woman. It might be a youth pastor's wife or a pastor's wife or a Sunday school leader, a BSF leader, a parachurch leader, but a mature Christian woman that he can recruit to help his girls. He can't be his little girls' mothers, but he can bring in the influence of Christian women who can help guide her through this book along with his help. Or vice versa, the single mom with little boys who wants to use the boys' book may want to recruit a man or some men, trustworthy Christian men, to help their little boys.
So let's talk about divorced parents. You know, there's so many broken homes out there. So what is a parent to do in that situation?
Yeah, my recommendation is that nobody don't do it. In other words,
yeah,
somebody
do it. Yeah.
That's probably not good English, but don't let it just wait. The earlier that you can start this information, the better. And what I mean by that is, I didn't want to write a book that gave parents something else to do. They are so busy and their lives are so crazy. They don't need you or me or Doc or anyone else to come along and say, here's something else to do. And so what I recommend is use the time you already have, and there's no better time than meals, for slowing down the eating process, maybe having two or three courses instead of one. Turn off the TV, turn off the radio, and just spend time talking. And the easiest way to do that, at least Barb and I found this with Kate and Scott as they were growing up, is just ask questions
yeah.
and listen. And you yeah. don't have to be the expert when they ask questions back, but to facilitate that any question is open at any time, and if I don't know the answer, we'll find it together. But I want to be your go-to man. I want to be your go-to woman. I want to be your dad. I want to be your mom. What you say is important. It's critical to me. And you can demonstrate that at mealtimes. Meg, you know that the medical literature shows that the more meals per week that a family
yes,
shares,
absolutely.
The better a child does by every single measure. And it appears that the cutoff is somewhere around 5 meals a week out of 21 meals. But 5 or more meals a week together as a family can have lasting benefits for children. I think that the data shows it's not just on that child, but actually on the next generation also.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's very hard because parents feel that their kids need everything except for them. Mm. And I tell parents, you know, when you sign your child up for one more thing or mm-hmm. you let them do one more thing, because parents say, well, my kids just really enjoy it, you're surrendering their time with you, and your kids need you mm-hmm. for solid identity and character development more than they need that stuff. And it's exactly what you're talking about for mealtime. That's when the great communication comes and the relationships are solidified. So let me just recap what you were just saying, Walt, that how important family mealtime is. So you're not. Are you saying that parents should sit down with their kids and talk about puberty during meals, or are you saying they should can just feel free to talk about anything?
B. Feel free to talk about anything, and you generate that with questions, and then your response to answers that come. And it's your kids' questions that can give you a clue as to what they're hearing at school, what they're hearing in the neighborhoods, what they're seeing on the internet, and what they're interested in talking about. But by opening the stage for those questions to occur, it can just be a wonderful time. And even now that our children are adults, we still savor those family discussions. And it's interesting that the studies show that families that eat more slowly, those kids are actually less likely to eat as much food.
Sure.
So it's actually a way to sort of fight that obesity epidemic that's going
there you
around.
Go.
But there's
yeah.
also so much that happens relationally and spiritually. Once again, you don't have to be the expert, but you do need to be the parent.
Exactly. Well, you go through a lot of physical changes that girls go through in the Ultimate Girls Body Book, but you also go through some things that I find intriguing and love to read about. You talk about moods in girls. Why do you spend so much time talking about mood shifts in young girls?
Well, anybody that's listening that's had a teenager or known a teenager or seen a teenager or even seen a movie about a teenager.
But in the same room as a teenager.
Exactly. It's moods, moods, moods. I mean, it can just be an eruption of moods. And I wanted to take a couple of tacks with this. One was to explain where they come from and to know that they are normal. Meg, I remember early on when Kate was approaching puberty, that was when Dr. Dobson came out with one of his earliest videos on preparing for adolescence. And it was in his video series, Turn Your Heart Towards Home. And I remember Barb and I were so excited because he was going to show us how to handle all this stuff that we feared about the teenage years. And he was at a blackboard. And he drew a line. He said, ladies and gentlemen, here's your child before the teenage years. And then they hit the teenage years. And then it was like a seismograph, like an earthquake went off.
It.
Up and down and up and down. And he said, there's two things you need to know. And then he stopped and the line was smooth again. He said, first of all, it will end.
Exactly.
And secondly, between point A and point B, when the earthquake's erupting, pray, pray, pray,
pray, pray.
And we were so disappointed. We thought, oh, we wanted more than that. But there's great truth there. So understanding where moods come from and how to respond to them, both the girls and the parents. But secondly, because we're seeing an explosion of childhood depression, teenage depression, teenage suicide, I wanted our young readers to be able to recognize any friends who might be having trouble and give them some tips on how they could help their friends get help. If I just hear one day that this book saved one life because one little girl took the time to care for another little girl that was thinking about suicide, well, that will have been worth all of the work by itself.
Yes. Do you think that the rise in depression is real, or do you think we're just diagnosing it better?
You know, it doesn't really matter to me. What I mean by that is that you mentioned earlier when you talk to your depressed patients that they're looking for spiritual answers. They're beginning to recognize the God-shaped vacuum in their heart. And we emphasize to girls and their parents that God puts us here not only to know Him, but to make Him known.
Yes.
And when we come across people who are hurting, there's no better time to come alongside and to love them in the name of Jesus. And so it's a book not just about going through puberty and all the bodily changes, but what's God calling you to as you go from girl to woman? Why is modesty important? Why is dressing important? Why is sexuality important? Why is purity important? Why is saving yourself in every way for your future husband important? And what is God calling to you? Who are you? Whose are you? And what is He calling you to? That's sort of the theme of this book.
Yeah. Well, it's really back to those four wheels again. You know, if you attended to just the physical changes or emotional changes, you know, you help part of the girl, but not the whole girl. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I love so much about it. Well, this half hour has flown by. And Dr. Larimore, there is so much to talk about in this book. I thank you so much for coming today. And I wonder if you would be gracious enough to come and join us tomorrow.
Oh, it would be a treat. I feel like we've just scratched the surface. And I bet parents are saying, I'd like to know a little more.
Well, they will. And we will bring it to them. Thank you.
You've been listening to the first part of our two-part program featuring physician-in-residence Dr. Meg Meeker and Dr. Walt Larimore here on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you'd like more information about Dr. Larimore or his book, The Ultimate Girl's Body Book, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. God bless, thanks for listening today, and be sure to check back with us next time for the conclusion of Helping Teen Girls Understand Their Bodies. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.